If we had to sum it up in one sentence, I'm sure Freya and Max can tell us exactly what they thought of last week's episode.
Olivia
Flidia
was
was awesome.
awesome.
There you go. That's pretty well the gist of it. So, for this week, we're talking about Letters of Transit, a special episode 19 that become a fringe tradition. They go get out of the box and do something off the wall, and they did it again this season. And joining us this week, unfortunately, Jan is not around at this time, so stepping in is an oft-time podcast companion. That's hard to say. Karen Lindsay. Hi, Karen. How you doing?
Hello, how are you guys?
Awesome. And ready and raring to talk about
Great.
this episode. So, Easter eggs. Well, I think of this one.
Spotted the observer.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's a scene where they weren't in, but.
I didn't see him this week.
Oh my goodness, no. You probably just saw Nazis, right?
Yeah.
It was a little bit
Space
heavy-handed.
Nazis.
Yeah.
They were
Neo
Marxists.
observers, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at least we know the glyph from last week spelled out Simon, so we found out this episode what that was all about. And the glyph for next episode spells out Quake. And if anybody saw the preview for next week, we also will understand that reference, but we won't talk about it until next week. So, with that out of the way, let's go around the table, and Karen will give you the honors of first impressions of this episode. And kind of put you on the spot, too.
Okay.
Oh,
It was observer-tastic.
all
Hey!
right. You can leave now.
I
expect that from Freya, but not from you, Karen.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a thrill-a-minute ride.
All right. Will you throw out the marketing material, please? And talk to us like a regular person.
Okay. I really, really loved this episode. I thought it was interesting to see that many observers in one place, and it's nice to have some of my old friends from Lost back.
Freya.
Who was from Lost?
Simon.
Desmond.
Oh, I
Simon.
know him from Scandal.
Okay.
Okay.
You really got to see his. He's got the signature episode for the series, too, The Constant. You should.
That's why everybody on Twitter
Yes.
has been talking about a guy named Desmond.
Yep.
I thought they had just read my next chapter. Okay. Let's see. My thoughts on the episode. I loved it. I kind of called Baby Dunham immediately just because of her actions, but I thought it was a really well done episode. I thought Epitaphs 1 and 2 on Dollhouse did it better, but that's a different story for a different day. Yeah. It raised a lot of questions. Like, is this set in stone, or are we trying to prevent this? Is this going to happen? And where the heck is Olivia? What happened to her? What did William Bell do? So those are my initial impressions.
Okay, Max.
Whew. I've watched this episode twice and I'm still not sure exactly what to think. But I think if I had to say, I would say this episode had a lot of issues, had a lot of, I think, questionable decisions. But in the end, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Interesting.
It moved past its flaws to be, I think, one of the more ambitious and interesting episodes that they've done in a long time.
Okay, very cool. I loved this episode. To me, this just proves the flexibility and viability of the Fringe franchise for them to be able to do an episode like this. And I also think it's a tribute to the SF science fiction genre in general that you can play with these kind of themes within a serialized television show like this. So I really thought that this was a treat. I was smiling a lot through it. I was laughing a lot, and I really appreciated all the nods and bits of genre cliches and whatnot that they weaved through the episode. And I thought they really pulled it off well. And like Freya said, it sets up a whole another whack of questions, which is probably driving a significant portion of the fan base crazy right now. But I just took it as a one-off, and I really enjoyed it. If it becomes something more in the next season, that'll be great. But for now, I just really appreciated what they did in this episode.
Happened to you, and so much is about to.
Okay, so let's go to our round table and let's get probably one of the main criticisms I'm seeing is the overtness of the how the observers in this episode were very Nazi-like. What did everybody feel about that? Were they okay with that? They thought it was not a good decision.
Just seemed communist to me more than Nazi.
Okay.
The propaganda posters were very communist in design, and it was almost a, I understand that it's closer to Nazi parallel-wise on how they took over everything, but just the feeling of it, how everything was so stark, it was almost washed out, black and white. And that, to me, that kind of screams communism.
Anybody else?
Then the observers being Nazis, I think, was probably my biggest issue with this episode. I didn't necessarily have a problem with them being fascist so much, although I don't think that they've done anything in previous episodes to necessarily point in that direction. I mean, the observers that we've seen so far in the show have all been fairly benign and hands off and pursuing science and not material power. So that was kind of an issue for me. I think my biggest issue though was not necessarily that they were fascist, but that they seemed to have human wants and desires, which I think was really tripping me up. Like though in the very beginning with the observer and the woman, that was totally bizarre to me. Because I've always seen the observers as pretty asexual, and they seem to act that way, and we've never seen any female observers. So seeing them like drinking and going to clubs and I guess spending time with prostitutes was really bizarre.
Okay, Freya.
I think the biggest problem I had with them being aligned to the Nazis is it's so easy. So many people do that, and it's kind of. I was a German major in college and studied the history of Germany and everything, but I think we could use a different parallel from now on and be more creative than that.
But like you said, it's so easy. I mean,
I
everybody
know.
knows what the Nazis, it's like perfect shorthand for fascist takeover.
Exactly.
And if you're against something or evil, automatically the word Nazi is added to you, like grammar Nazi. And even the closed captioning in this one, in this episode, because when I watch at home, I watch next to a huge fish tank, which overpowers the sound of the speakers. So I watch closed captioning on, and they called them the neo-observers, neo-Nazis. And then the people had the numbers on their cheeks. And I mean, I know it's not the inner arm, but it's kind of like, okay, guys, come on. The communist posters reminded me of the "Yes, we can" posters, and I was laughing and not in a good way at those. But yeah, very Orwellian, very clean. Like the only place we really saw graffiti was at the very beginning when she was walking into the club. And everything seemed very sterile.
I actually didn't really have a problem with that. I think, like Max said, that it's a visual shorthand of this in a show that's probably been confusing viewers a lot lately. They just wanted to play it safe here. And could they have done something more original than set them up to seem like a lot like the Nazis? Yeah, I guess they could have. But for a show that's been throwing a lot of reality balls up in the air, I don't really ding them too much for taking the safe and easy route to set up the visual cues that, yeah, we're in this type of society and this is the route we're taking. And I have to say, part of that is that because I really enjoyed the lead two observers, the Captain Windmark and the Neo Observer that got blown up by the antimatter bomb. I just thought that those two guys were really well cast, and they used them really well with certain camera shots and angles to make them really look menacing and whatnots. And so I enjoyed all of that. I think I was bothered more by the fact that all the observers were white males. I think they could have been a little more out of the box with that and showing like a different, mix of male, female, different colors, different races of observers instead of going with the all white male. So that's probably the part that bothered me more than the actual Nazi motif that they use.
But wouldn't that fit in with the Nazi motif?
Well, this is science fiction, right? So you don't have to stick in with, you don't have to play it so close to the vest. I think they could have expanded a little bit and thrown in some other races there to mix it up a little bit. What is interesting, because this episode is totally not real, well, it is cleverly connected to our current reality in certain ways, but with the observers, like we've only seen this one small select group of scientists, and they might be outside of the mainstream of the society, or these observers that we're seeing in this episode could be outside of the mainstream of their society in the future. We don't really know, but yeah, it's hard to say without more context about is this the norm for the future society? We'll have to see if they get a chance to show that down the road. But so that was very interesting.
I want to know is how they're doing this without the paradox machine that the master and the doctor used in the fifth season or the fourth, third or fourth season. Third season. Okay. Yeah. And if you got that, you're a Doctor Who fan and welcome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was rolling my eyes at you because Lou won't get it.
No, I was getting it. I was just trying to, she's talking about something else now. It's probably Doctor Who. And then you said it. So
yeah,
I was
well,
there.
They would need a paradox machine, wouldn't they?
I don't know. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the opening scene in the club. And what did everybody think of that? I know, Max, you were saying you had problems with how the observers were acting, but I liked the vibe of it. And I thought it was a nice touch that the club owner's first name was Rick. So if anybody's watched Casablanca,
yep,
you'll obviously get that reference. So
yeah,
I liked it. And the
there
opening
was a lot of references in this episode.
Yeah. And the opening
the
credits
openings,
as well.
Yeah. Opening
yeah.
credits to Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, the club scene. You know, beyond what I've already said, you know, I was confused by this whole concept of reading and wiping.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was another thing that had never been mentioned before, I don't believe.
Well, we've seen the observers read thoughts before.
We have?
Sure.
When was this?
The first time.
What was he going to say?
Yeah, the first time Peter met one. He said everything that he was going to say just before he
oh,
said.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's been established.
You know, actually, my biggest issue wasn't the club scene. It was what happened after.
In the alleyway?
Yeah, in the alleyway when Rick gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
That was so totally random for me.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets shot, and then we see this guy running away, and there's, like, barely any explanation as to why. I mean, they say it was a loyalist, but what? Do the loyalists just run around town shooting people randomly? It didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like the RA fighting against the British and stuff like that, I guess.
I thought he might have been following guy with the van.
Yeah, well, if that
was
true, why didn't
come out.
Why didn't he shoot at Etta? Or, you know, why didn't these loyalists go to the observers and report what they saw? It just was so weird.
Yeah, that was probably a throwaway.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer. All we could do is give conjecture. But yeah, I agree with you. The point wasn't really that clear. I mean, I think they tried to clear it up a little bit later on when Etta went to get the old tech from that one guy behind the wire cage. That you sort of got the intimation that there's this, you know, this
the guy
opposing.
That really needed shave.
Yeah, the guy that needed the shave. That there's this opposing faction that's monitoring what people like this Rick person were doing. So, but it wasn't a direct reference. It was kind of an inferred one, so that's the best I've got for that.
Well, they tried to explain it. It kind of felt like they tried to explain it in the Star Wars opening,
mm-hmm,
the words, but it really felt like a throwaway point so that they could, let's put this group of loyalists that we won't see again, and we can shoot, we can have them shoot him in the head, and then it can be mentioned, and okay, that works.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it was that the show was sticking to its formula a bit too, that they just had to throw in something shocking before the opening credits, and that's what they came up with.
Well, I love the new credit preview thing, and I actually downloaded them. I like them so much. I love the references.
Well, that guy was like a mirror image of Emperor Palpatine, and it went along with the later on the reference to Star Wars as well, and
mm-hmm,
I thought that club was where you mentioned Rick, it also, the rest of the ambiance seemed very noir.
Yep.
With her outfit being from the 20s, 30s, 40s, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that they were talking and just the feel, I thought, was very noir.
I thought it was pretty cool. So then of course, we get the reveal of Walter and the Amber, and that was pretty cool. I like that. And from there, Etta brings us in, and oh, and the cool thing that we found about Etta, apparently she's able to block or misdirect observers' probes. So that was kind of like the first inkling that there's something different about this character, wouldn't you say, Freya?
Yeah, that, and she had Olivia's mannerisms. She moved exactly like Olivia. Like, I was watching, I was like, whoa, she studied Anna Torv.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And do you want to know where
I knew
said,
who
oh,
she
yeah.
was? I knew who she was from the first second because she appeared on screen. I mean, she looked like a blending of Olivia and Peter.
She really
They
did.
it was I think it's maybe the best casting they've ever done on this show
Agreed.
in terms of guest actors.
And do you want to know a curious thing about this young actress?
She's Australian.
That's right.
I caught a little accent there somewhere.
Yeah,
It's like
so
I
I talked
said
about
something
funny
about
things.
that up front because my husband was watching it with me. I said, I bet that's Olivia and Peter's daughter. And he was like, yeah, right, whatever. And at the end of the show, he was like up front. But in this case, I honestly thought it was pretty clear.
Sounds like Freya and Maximus, you also picked up on that?
Yes, I did. As soon as I saw her, she just looked too much like
Olivia.
Olivia.
He had Peter's eyes and Olivia's mannerisms, plus, the whole not being able to be read. Cortex event! Yep.
Okay, so I have to admit I wasn't sure who she was. I figured she was related to them in some way, but I didn't know what the time span was, or I hadn't locked into the time span, and I didn't know who was in the amber either, so that I wasn't quite sure. So
No, and the name Edda kind of gave it away.
well, not
Oh,
really, because
really? Not for me.
I didn't know that it could be a short for
Well,
Henrietta
yeah,
until she
their
said it.
baby's name was Henry and Henrietta, so.
Yeah.
For me, it was, I thought, because Olivia's niece and nephew are Ella and Eddie, I thought there may have been a possibility that she was a second niece, but that actually kind of, I figured that Olivia's sister probably had to raise her, so Ella, Eddie, and Edda makes sense.
I wondered about that because she said the last time she'd seen her parents was when she was 4. So, I mean, I assumed it would have been Nina, considering that Nina raised Olivia. But I didn't get that vibe from them in their scenes, so I don't know.
No, they seemed like they might know each other, but not like super well.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think
Also,
because of the whole, they didn't really want the people to know that this was the kid of the original Fringe team, so fitting him in with Olivia's sister might have been easier because she already had kids.
right.
If you do the math, Olivia should be pregnant like right about now. Yes.
Well, they have been getting a lot of alone time the last two episodes,
They've been
so
practicing at least.
I just thought that was
It's ruined.
interesting.
They're going to be a baby. Anytime they bring a cute kid on, that's it.
Yeah, I didn't realize that until my second watch, but after that, I was like, oh, well, in order for this to work out, Olivia has to be pregnant pretty much right now.
Yeah, because,
Not necessarily.
well, the observers take over his team.
And the original Fringe team fights, but they don't say how long they fight.
Right. So, but it's soon.
But she's only 24?
Right.
Yeah, she's only 24, so it would have to be 2012.
Did she say she was 24?
She said she was 4 the last time she saw her parents, and Peter said they were in the amber for 20 years, so.
Okay. I forgot about the Amber line there.
Peter might have been approximating too, right? So it could have been a year or two late, but there's wiggle room in there.
Yeah.
We'll see. Okay, so we had that Walter reveal in the amber, and then we meet Simon Foster for the first time, who, to all us Losties, of course, was Desmond on Lost. So it was really nice to see him again, and I thought he played his character pretty well. It was interesting that when they were trying to get Walter out of the amber, and Edda says, well, why don't we push him out? And then he says, well, not unless you want to be encased in the amber yourself, which was unknown to us at that time, foreshadowing. So that was a nice line. And so the whole bit with getting the level 2 tech, the crowd control tech, and then ejecting Walter out of the amber, I thought that whole sequence was pretty cool. What did you guys think about all that stuff?
I thought it was neat. A bit of extreme way of getting Walter out of the amber. He went flying back and slammed into that wall. I thought that was like, whoa, Walter's not a young man. Yeah, not exactly. You guys should have at least padded the wall or
I
something.
was wondering about that too.
Yeah, well, it looked like they had put boxes there, but he was kind of high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they mentioned something about it not being timed correctly. She said you were late.
Yeah.
and apparently that had something to do with it. But yeah, that was a little jarring. I thought it was poor funny, Walter.
But... Yeah, it was funny though.
I kind of have to wonder at how this device works. I mean, it pushed everything off the table, and that was fine. Didn't move the table at all.
Mm-hmm.
Pushed Walter, but didn't push the gas.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
Physics.
How? What does it push?
Magic.
Physics.
It's magic.
Physics.
That's all you have to say.
You just have to say fringe. It's fringe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah we're going to hand wave that, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Throw that out there.
But maybe it's they can selectively choose their target. Maybe they can lock on multiple targets and pick which one they want to move. I don't know.
Or to only push the mad scientist encased in carbon. I mean amber.
Carbonite.
Carbonite. Yeah.
Somebody another had to make a Star Wars joke.
Yeah. That's another Star Wars reference. Very good.
Yeah.
I like that.
They could have filtered out the amber since it's kind of a solo thing.
Yeah.
And to say everything but the amber gets pushed out.
Yeah, and to stretch the Star Wars analogies, the crowd control device kind of looked like a lightsaber.
It certainly did.
Yeah, so that was
lightsaber would have been so cool in this episode.
Would have been.
Yeah.
nice sound effects. There.
Thank you.
Walter would have been amazing with a lightsaber.
Yes.
Yeah.
More horrifying.
Yes, especially before he got his brain regenerated.
Was he not adorable like that?
That was probably my favorite part of it, was just him airplaning around.
Yes, I loved how everything was full of wonder for him.
Yeah.
Licorice.
Do you have any ring-dings?
Yeah. He's just so cute.
Like then he says, 20 years? No wonder I'm so hungry.
Yeah. Dorbs.
Yeah, that was a great line. It was interesting to watch Simon and Etta kind of, especially when they went to the city and Simon made up the cover story and said, oh no, that's your grandfather, which, of course, that's telling the truth. He just didn't know it, so.
Right.
Well, all the best lies have a ring of truth in them, so.
Yes, exactly.
Way to go, Etta.
Yep.
Well, that was actually Simon.
Oh, okay, way to go, Simon.
These aren't the droids you're looking for, too. Made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Move along.
And I says, I'm not a prisoner. I'm not a number.
I love how indignant he is, too.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't that a reference to the prisoner?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so.
Plus, the prisoner, they were stuck in bubbles. So it's kind of a reference to that as well.
Yeah.
Did anyone else think that Walter was actually somewhat lucid in that scene and he was just playing crazy? The way he just stared at that guy.
I think he was there and his anger may have, I don't know, you know, when your adrenaline goes, sometimes you're more than what you are normally. And I think.
Terrified of him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Physics, pharmacology. I think he was conveniently either lucid or irrational, depending on what they needed at any given moment within that scene. So,
that's true.
Yeah, I think they played with it, and it was a lot of fun. And the trace station sequence again had that very World War II kind of feel to it as well. Prisoner, the Great Escape, kind of escaping kind of scene. So.
When they were looking at his brain scan, it kind of looked like his neurons were just firing incorrectly, or at least that's what I got from it. So perhaps his neurons were firing in a way where he would be one way one minute and one way the next minute. I don't know.
Oh, that's too deep for me.
Yeah.
Well, remember, this is coming from someone who knows an awful lot about neurology. So.
Yeah. So the first time I watched this episode, the whole Walter brain damage plot device really seemed like they're throwing this in because they're just trying to pad out the story. And I wasn't really that into it until started meeting Nina and things like that. But the second time I watched it, I realized that they used it for a lot of clever things. So I enjoyed it much more the second time. His meeting with Nina was interesting as well.
I think they could have spent a little bit less time on it.
Yeah.
Sped the pace up a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have liked to see more intrigue around them getting in and out of the building. That would have been interesting, and seeing him like try and find things in there to pick up along the way. Mm-hmm. I just think that would have been neat if he had seen something and, oh, shiny.
I did appreciate the contrast, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he immediately becomes sharp again, and that was...
Yeah, Walter Bishop, I guess, is not the man... It's not a man you want to get on the bad side of.
No.
And it's really interesting how they keep playing with that aspect of his personality throughout the series, how he can be like this genial old grandfather, whatever, who likes candy and makes bathroom humor funny and whatever.
Walks around and naked.
Yeah, walks around naked and makes food in the buff, whatever. But he can flip a switch and he becomes like this cold, methodical, really dangerous man. And it's just really interesting contrast that they've created in his character.
I think the TV trope for that is almost, not quite, but almost crouching moron, hidden badass.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah, and we saw the payoff for that at the end of the episode, of course, when he removed a hand from somebody that we'll talk about a bit later. But
that was just cold.
Yeah, that was cold.
They explained why he was cold about that. So
yeah, I did like how they aged up Broyles and Nina. I thought they were, that was relatively well done, and Nina's
very well done.
Nina's wheelchair was pretty cool.
I thought. It was subtle in Nina's case, at least, and not so subtle that you didn't get that she had aged. I just thought that was good. I think Broyles was a little less subtle. Obviously, his skin was much pockier, but yeah, they did a good job with the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And not just that, but the observers. Normally, when you see observers, you don't see them up that close. And to see their skin, how chalky it was and everything, it really added a bit of dimension to them.
Mm-hmm. And I like Walter fixing Nina's arm.
That
was good.
That was neat.
And I like how, again, I mentioned it off the top, but I thought that the actors, Michael Copsa, that played the Captain Windmark, and the other guy that got blown up by the antimatter device, Yurikis, the Neo Observer, I thought they photographed them or used their features very well to make them look menacing or arrogant at times. Like interesting lighting and camera angles. And when they're walking down the hallways in the abandoned massive dynamic, very, very military clopping down the hallways. I really loved those scenes. I thought that was really well done.
Yep, same here.
I agree.
I love that his name was Windmark because... We had Desmond, and then a name so close to Widmark, or Widmore, sorry.
Yeah. I was thinking if they were meant Richard Widmark, but I didn't. I wasn't
sure. The actor?
Yeah. Maybe it was an homage to him. I wasn't sure. Freya, why don't you talk a little about when they got into Massive Dynamics and they got the brains.
Okay. So they get these brains that kind of look like shrimp.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was like, why is Walter not hungry?
what did Walter call them?
Monkey
feces.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
Walter's eaten some weird crap.
Yeah. He says, you've eaten monkey feces? Of course not.
No,
but I've eaten brains.
Yeah.
And LSD. I love LSD.
Yeah. His grandfather used to put brains in his eggs. So.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Brains of what?
I think pig brain.
Pig brains. Yummy.
You can get lamb
delicious.
as well, and cow.
It's a good source of protein, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I like how clean that room was after not having been touched in so many years. Whatever they use as cleaning materials at Massive Dynamic, I need some for my apartment.
Agreed.
Because I'll never have to clean again. Granted, I might have to deal with observers coming in, but according to Fringe, they're already everywhere I go anyway, so.
That's right. Can you imagine how pristine your bathroom would be?
Oh, that would be awesome.
I know. It would be.
Just like they performed basically brain surgery in that room that
hasn't
been cleaned in years.
Yeah.
I could get into taking a shower in a room that clean.
I wonder if they chose Simon's name just as a setup so Walter could say, Simon says, go to sleep now, Walter.
That was funny.
That was pretty good. And they used that beats while Walter was out to talk about to give some backstory. And I thought it was interesting that Simon said that he was with a girl named Emily.
Oh, okay. And they spelled it like... with an IE too on the closed caption.
Oh, did they?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. So I don't know if that a reference to a character that I thought at first it was Ellie, but I guess it's
Emily.
And So we find out that Simon's parents basically saved him. So he's obviously motivated to honor the sacrifice that they made for him. And when we got to that beat, did you guys expect that he would do that? Or
figured.
Yeah.
Chekhov's push.
Chekhov's push, because we mentioned it before.
Yeah. He's mirroring his parents in that moment. And I thought it was apt that he would bring them up and then he would make the decision to go into the amber and let Peter out. Mm. So he's essentially making a sacrifice for a family member. I just thought it was interesting. And it's not his family member, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And there was misdirection there too, because before that we never saw Peter. We saw somebody else. And how did that grab everybody?
I said WTF.
I laughed. That's how they got around using, you know, not putting his name in the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he wasn't really there.
Well, I knew it was a misdirect. Yeah. I knew they didn't actually free William Bell.
Right.
Because that had to do with more off-screen things.
Yeah.
You know, knowing about Leonard Nimoy and his...
Right. But it was pretty cool to see... To see him in the Amber, but it sets up a whole whack of questions, like what timeline is this, right?
Right, so, and what was he doing there?
Yeah.
Well, we know it's the Blue Universe.
Yeah,
right.
Some version
of it. Doesn't talk about drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that answers that, and obviously he probably didn't die in this timeline.
Right.
If you saw him.
So, yeah, I thought somebody had mentioned earlier in the season that he had died. But I saw this theory, I was on Television Without Pity, I saw this theory that maybe he had faked his death, and that William Bell might actually be working with David Robert Jones to prevent this future from happening.
Interesting.
You didn't see any portraits wandering around.
I thought it was, you know, an interesting theory, and it made me think about what was going on, you know, and whether or not we would ever see this future again.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a lot of people were saying on Television Without Pity that producers had said that if there's a season 5, that they're actually going to revisit this timeline.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I know that they, I think Josh Jackson said that, you know, whatever the season 5 is going to be, the seeds for it are in here. But I'm wondering if it has more to do with the fact that Olivia was not in this episode, and I think this is what ties in with premonition that, or the statement that September has made that in every future that he's seen, Olivia has to die. And obviously in this timeline, does everybody think that Olivia was killed in this timeline?
Yeah, they said so.
Well, they didn't say it. They just said what Bell had done to Olivia.
And then so her daughter has a bullet around her neck.
Right, but they didn't say that she
no,
was
but
killed.
That's really spelled out.
I don't know. This is Fringe.
Yeah.
You can never be too sure. At first, I thought she was going to be in the Amber.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they showed that she wasn't there, I thought maybe she was dead.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of got the impression that Etta expected her to be there.
Or was hoping, yeah.
Or yeah, or was hoping. So maybe she's not dead.
But maybe she just doesn't know that her mother had died either. I mean, because she was only 4, right?
I guess that's true.
But she has a bullet.
But she knew about Peter, though, so why would
Peter
she know
noticed.
About
right.
her mother?
But the bullet might have been the bullet that killed September.
Mm-hmm.
Why would she wear that around her neck?
Yeah, that's...
Because he was the one that fought for them. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird keepsake, that's for sure.
I got the impression that it was the bullet that killed her mother, and that's how Peter finally came to the realization that he was her father.
I don't think he ever saw the bullet, though.
Yeah, she had it out.
No, see, I think they paid it off, the whole eyes thing.
Yeah.
I think he looked into her eyes, and that's...
Oh, those that eyes again.
but seriously, I think that's what they did.
Yeah, I agree with you, because he looked at her, and then he kind of did a double take, right?
Yeah.
I thought Josh Jackson played that scene wonderfully. So.
He did.
Yeah, I thought he had that was some really good acting from him. He only had like 5 lines, and
I mean,
he did a really good job.
Yeah, and people complain that he's not in the series enough, but I mean, when you get a scene like that, I would sit on the sidelines just to be able to step in at the end of an episode and have a scene like that. I mean, that was That was very powerful and affecting scene. So
it was, and
yeah, and Georgina Hague was really good.
Yes.
Yeah.
He did a stellar job, Peter, and in the short amount of time, he made a lot of impact. I thought he looks like my brother so much. It's so weird. Every time I see him, he's like, it's like a mirror image of my brother 20 years ago. So.
Oh, okay. Weird. Interesting.
I was about to ask if your brother was single.
My brother's in his 50s.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
He's 13 years older than me, and I'm old enough to be your mom, aren't I?
I don't know. I mean, Peter's only like 10 years older than his daughter at the moment.
Yeah.
That's true.
How much of a mind frack must that be?
Really? Yeah.
And if Olivia is alive somehow,
Peter's not.
She's like 20 years older than him now.
Yeah.
Talk about cougars.
Yeah.
Well, we know that it's 15 years from then, she didn't look changed at all, so.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes.
So chances are she has an age. It's the cortex, man.
It is. It preserves things. Physics.
Physics. You're trying to set the tone, the motto for the podcast, I think.
Physics?
Yeah.
Kepler.
Everything else I got is random.
Can I say something?
Sure. Please do.
I think it'll be cool if this show was on for another like 3 years and every 19th episode involved Broyles staring at a red vine.
Yeah.
Because the minute he did it, I was like, oh, it's LSD, yes.
Yes.
So, let's make that happen.
Where have I seen this before?
Fans, showrunners, actors, let's join together and for this great cause.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I loved how many pop culture references were in this episode.
Yeah.
There were surprisingly a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them. We had Star Wars. We had, I do think that was kind of an overt reference to Casablanca. And what else did we have? We had some other stuff.
Prisoner.
Blade
the
Runner.
Prisoner, yeah. Blade Runner, yeah.
Great Escape. Guns of Navarone. He came up late and he came out and said that.
Yeah.
That was a great comment, boy, Walter.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so they just interweave so much genre, like older war type movies plus science fiction stuff. So, just a really great episode. And it was interesting that the observers were red in the opening credits. So I'm wondering if that has something to do with this green, green, red, or red, red, green sequence that we see as well. So I don't know. Observers are red. It's interesting.
I really am curious as to what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, we haven't found out whether they're human or not, right?
But they said they're from the future.
Yeah, from the future. But they came. They're saying they came. They ruined the planet, and then they came back to take it from them.
In this timeline.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. They just look so different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if they were from some other realm or something. And Azeroth. Hey. Don't make fun. I live there. but no, Azeroth, they'd be green. They'd be ogres or something. But anyway, it just struck me that, I never thought of them as anything but human until last night. And then I thought, wow, they're really referring to them as them or us. And I understand there's factions, but it just puts something in my head that says, yeah, they came from the future, but did they come from the future where they invaded Earth or something? I mean, nothing is beyond the realm of possibility with this show. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's one of the cool things about it. Did we mention outright that Walter took Belle's hand? I know we sort of
alluded to it.
We alluded to it. So that was pretty cool. like you were saying, yeah, like you were saying, Max, that if you cross Walter, he can be pretty harsh.
Oh yeah, and the scene with the antimatter I thought was pretty
yes.
cool.
Yeah.
Although I did have an issue with that.
Uh-huh.
After the building, I don't know what it did, exploded, imploded,
imploded,
cloaked,
yeah.
disappeared.
Yeah.
It's like nobody reacted at all.
Well, they were reacting out in
They
the.
turned, but that's pretty much it.
I think they're all in shock.
If you see a building, just randomly disappear, implode,
You wanted them all to run away?
Yeah, I think you react a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Well, they were all stunned. They're stunned.
Well, in our day, it would be up on YouTube within 20 seconds, maybe 30.
Yeah. I didn't see any cell phones, though.
Yeah, it seemed like we kind of went back in time a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that was a nice touch. I thought it showed how the Fringe Division had been relegated to some kind of,
second.
Afterthought. How they were all, all their equipment looked dirty.
Yeah.
They had old technology.
Yeah, the guy had duct tape on his computer terminal.
Yep.
Yeah.
The thing about the Fringe Division is we're using the other side's logo.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wonder what happened there.
Mm.
Was there a combining at some point, perhaps?
That would be cool. More for Olivia. I mean, what?
Huh?
Wait, what was that about for Olivia?
There needed to be more of her.
Oh, yes, for Olivia, because she's so awesome.
That's
she
right.
Awesome.
Yes, she is. Okay, so that's pretty well everything I had. So we'll just go around the table for any comments about the episode that we didn't cover. And we'll start with you, Karen.
Well, not mentioned was Astrid.
Oh, yes. Yes. That was cool when she popped out. Yeah.
Yeah, she was cute. She looked very concerned for Walter when she first came out. And, after they revived her and everything. But I thought she was really neat in this. Very subtle to add her. And, and that's when you realize that that Olivia's not there. Because they said a woman and a man.
Yeah.
Astrid would qualify as the woman. So it was nice to see her.
Anything else?
No. Have they ever determined whether you feel things when you're in the amber?
Didn't one guy that they took out of the amber or say he was dreaming or something like that? I'm sure that we had that episode.
Yeah. Is that the one with the twins?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes me wonder if Belle is like screaming his head off in there.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't think Freya would mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, apparently, because of what he did, quote unquote. But I don't know. A lot of things crossed my mind in this episode, and I love when a show makes me think.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Okay, Max?
I think, while. As much as this episode was really like a showcase for John Noble, which, most episodes of the show are, because he's awesome, I think not enough has been said so far in this podcast about what, Georgina Hague and Henry Ian Cusack both did, especially Georgina Hague, because she really had to carry this episode on her own. Mm-hmm. I mean, she had to be like the Olivia stand-in, and I think she did a fantastic job. I mean, we mentioned earlier that she was perfect casting, and I think she really was. Cause it seemed like, she spoke a lot like Olivia. She had her – I think Freya said she had her mannerisms down. She looked like Olivia, and I thought she was – I've never seen her anything before, but I thought she was a really good actor.
Very expressive, too.
Yes. And, Henry Ian Cusack was – fantastic. I really felt for Simon.
Yep.
And I think I actually connected more to his character than Etta.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Georgina did a great job. But yeah, I mean, Simon was great. And if we do revisit this timeline, I hope that they find some way to get him out of the amber.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. I love him in whatever he's in.
Yep. Okay. Freya.
I basically have to second Matt's on everything he just said. Although, to get him out of the amber, I think we have to get Scandal canceled, and I don't want that to happen. I like that show. So.
Physics,
yeah. But the thing I'm wondering is, this is episode has just raised so many questions about, is this, like I said, is this set in stone? Is this like, because anybody here who's seen Dollhouse knows that there's Epitaph 1 and Epitaph 2, which are set 10 years in the future, and of course, they don't really age the actors at all, but different rant for a different day. And you find out at the, spoiler alert, you find out that there was no way to avoid it, and that was going to happen. So, is this going to happen? And now I'm really curious to see how they answer that, or like how they avoid it, or how they explained it, because there are already so many questions.
Yeah. And I
questions.
Yeah, I think the show has shown us already that no future is set, because we've seen the one where Peter went into the future over before, and Olivia was killed, and that's not going to happen anymore, at least not that way.
Yeah,
but
you know that some things are fated. I know. I'm sorry. I hate to use that term, but September told them that there's no way that they can get around the fact that Olivia has to die.
Right.
So.
And I think that's the crux of where the change in the show, in the destiny or future or whatever is going to happen. Because I think
right.
that obviously for the show, Olivia has to live. Because otherwise, you know, people will be very upset if they suddenly wipe her out or make her forget everything that's happened for the previous 3-4 seasons. No.
Gee, where did that happen?
But
that wasn't me that time.
You know. But, yeah, I just want to reiterate, I guess for the fourth time, that I thought that the casting in this episode was fantastic. And right down the line, not just Georgina, but she definitely shone. But I mentioned the observers. I thought the actors they picked for those guys were great. And, of course, to see Henry and Cusack. If you guys haven't seen him in Lost and you haven't watched Lost, I highly recommend just watching that one episode, The Constant, because it's probably one of the best fate, destiny, love stories that you're ever going to see within a 1-hour television show. Very touching, and he was just fantastic in that series. That's so
sob-worthy.
Yeah.
That episode.
And, yeah, they had a lot of fun. This episode was a lot of fun, and they pretty well nailed it on almost every aspect. Like, the casting was great, and I like what they did with the observers here. As a series premise, I would argue much more strongly about how easy they took to make them the bad guys by going with a Nazi motif. But for a one-off episode that you may or may not revisit, I thought it was a good visual shorthand to set up this world and get past that and get into the story that I actually wanted to tell. So this was a really well-crafted episode on many levels. And I'm thinking, probably based on a reaction that I'm seeing here and on the net in general, if they do get a fifth season, I think that this Georgina Hague will probably make a return appearance next year, because she's definitely struck a lot of chords, and it must be nice for her because I've looked at her bio, and she's been like second running choice for a lot of, like, she almost got one of the roles in the Wrath of the Titans. She lost out to the girl that just is in the new Spider-Man movie. She was up for that role. So she's been like in second place a lot of times, and for her to get this kind of notice is good. And it's much like with the girl that we interviewed, Alexis, who played the girl that could draw the future. It could be a breakout or a high visibility role for them, and hopefully it will be, because she was very good, and I definitely would love to see more of her in this show. So there you go, folks. That's our episode review of Letters of Transit. And we're now going to do our episode rating. And who would like to go first? Nobody? All right.
Oh, Karen.
Karen?
Me? Karen.
Okay, what's the scale on this again?
Jeans and Kate and Amber.
Yeah.
Well, but 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 or
10.
What?
1 to 10.
Okay. I give it a 9 shrimp jelly beans.
Okay. Very good.
I thought that's what the brains look like.
Shrimp jelly beans and monkey feces. Anyhow, I would give this a 9.25 half-eaten Twizzler.
There's a meal, shrimp jelly beans and Twizzlers.
Yep.
Yes, only on Fringe, and only when you're, visiting Walter and his drugs. I'll give it a. I'll go with 9. Jeans encased in amber.
Okay. Max, in your favorite position.
Okay, because of the performances from Georgina and Henry and John Noble, and I think the ambitious undertaking, this episode could be considered like a backdoor pilot for a spinoff almost.
Yep.
I would give this episode an 8.5.
All right. Very good. Okay, folks, there you go. That's our episode review for Letters of Transit. Karen, I want to thank you very much for stepping in for Jan.
Of course, anytime.
And Jan, we hope that you're back next week. We missed you.
Agreed. I'm sorry,
And
that's how I had to come.
Freya and Max, once again, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And let's all say so long, everybody.
Oh,
sayonara, everybody.
Ciao.
Bye.
And scene.